Hey, gang, you got a minute? Good. Looks like I'll need a little moral support in opening this week's surprise package. It's loaded with pretty ribbons and perfume and stuff, so I may need a little help in seeing just what's what here. Let's see, just what do we have? Well, hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm here to plead a cause.
Oh?
Yes, the cause for women. Always it's the men whose opinions are stated.
Oh, I don't agree.
Well, look at information, please. Almost always it's men on the program.
Well, sometimes I've
just
heard
how women... often do women really get a chance to speak?
Well, miss, as far as
we have to fight our way into every conversation. Now, I want to correct that situation.
I don't object to
just your hold your tongue, young man, and listen a minute.
Okay, but I still think...
Here's what I think people should do.
Leave it to the girl. This is Andre Baruch inviting you to join us in the fastest half-hour in radio. 30 minutes of rapid-fire entertainment with five of the most glamorous and successful girls in America. Paula Stone, Madge Evans, Robin Chandler, Eloise McElhorn, and our girl of the week is the lovely young radio critic of the New York World Telegram, Harriet Van Horn. Facing this round table of romance is the well-known radio commentator, philosopher, and poet, Ted Malone. And now the girl who asked the question. The charming young star of stage, screen, and radio, co-producer of the Broadway hit The Red Mill, Paula Stone.
Thank you, Andre Baruch, and hello, everybody. First and foremost tonight, I want to thank you for the wonderful letters you've been sending in. Really, we appreciate these letters, and we have them all stacked up in our mailbag. And, Andy, we want you to pull out some of these letters and read them off, and we'll see if we can come up with the right answers and help out our listeners.
All right, Paula. Our first question is from a man, from Mr. Fred Cohenor of Hammond, Indiana. I am planning on marrying a beautiful but dumb girl. I would like to ask you girls this. Could a smart man be happy with a beautiful but dumb wife?
The trick is to find a smart man. What would you say, Robin?
Well, of course, if he doesn't know, he's not smart. But he thinks he's smart, so I should imagine he's quite happy. He'll get along with a dumb girl. Two of a kind.
Oh, I see. And Harriet?
It might work out advantageously for both parties. If she's stupid, she'll go through her married life thinking he's a paragon of virtue and excellence. Of course, he'll meet no intellectual challenge in her. You remember the old French story about the man who married a dumb wife? They were so terribly happy seeing her world and he and his. And finally, a surgeon performed some sort of miracle operation which made her a brilliant and ruthless conversationalist. She talked all the time until the poor man had to send to the doctor and say, please, make her dumb again.
Yes, sir.
That was no operation. That happens all the time. But I think the girls have missed one very important point. And apparently the gentleman has two here. You said that he wanted to marry, that he was going to marry a dumb girl. Wasn't
he's
that the idea?
No.
That he's thinking about marrying a dumb girl.
Yes.
Well, apparently, if any gal has worked him up to that point, she's not so dumb. Maybe he just thinks so.
So very obviously, this man thinks he's smart and thinks the girl he's marrying is dumb. And I would say, and I think the girls will agree with me, that he has a good deal there. She's beautiful and is satisfying to him. And if she's dumb, she won't know that he's not as smart as he thinks he is. So I don't see why Mr. Fred Conover of Hammond should be too worried. Eloise, you want to add to that?
Yes, well, I was just going to say, I really don't... I, of course, far be it for me to make any disparaging remarks about the men. But I really don't think that he's so smart, because if he is, why is he writing in to five girls for advice? He better marry this girl. It's the only kind he'll ever get.
And Meg?
I just wanted to say she's beautiful, and she's not so dumb that she can't get what she's after.
Well, to sum this all up, this man is very mistaken. He happens to be the luckiest man in the world. He's marrying a beautiful girl, by his own words, and a very smart girl. Or else there's such a shortage of men that he's just putting up with him and deciding that's the best he can do. Eloise?
Well, anyway, Paula, they're bound to be happy because a dumb girl is as smart as a smart man thinks he is.
So, Andre Baruch, let's consider that Eloise won that round. Now, what is our next question? Who is it from?
Our next question is from Brooklyn, New York. The initials are no name, please, so I don't know if it's a man or a woman. I've been married for 2 years and expect a baby in the very near future.
It's a woman.
Must be a woman. My husband and I have many talks about naming the baby. He thinks it ought to be named after his side of the family. Since it's my first baby, I feel that I should have the privilege of naming it. But we've decided to leave it to the girls to decide for them. Paula?
Well, now, I think that's an awfully nice compliment, girls. And what would you say, Madge?
Well, as long as the parents can't agree, why not wait until the child's old enough to select its own name? In the meantime, they can call him Sonny, or they can call her Sis.
Well, I think that's a very cute suggestion. What would you add, Harry? Oh, I'm sorry, Harry, for the man.
No, I don't know. This kind of hurts me, Madge. But I have to agree with you. I don't know how... This is the first time it's happened since I've been here. But we had that very experience at our house. We were expecting a boy, and so we had a name. We were going to call it Junior, see? And a girl arrived, so that Junior wouldn't work, so we sort of discussed it back and forth, and she's 6 years old now, and she still doesn't have a name. But we call her Happy, and we're going to let her decide her own name, and she seems to be very happy about it.
Well, I think that's cute, Robin.
Well, I'm worried about your child, Ted. I'm afraid people are going to say, hey, you know, they'll call her that.
I've seen some people go up to lovely girls like you and say, hey, you, and it works.
Harriet?
Well, I think if a woman goes to all the bother of having a child, she should be allowed to select the name herself, whether it comes from the latest boudoir novel or a book of wildflowers or the medical dictionary. And if her husband objects, she simply can say, well, darling, you name the next one.
Yes, Ed?
The girls usually don't say the next one. They say, this is the last one.
I wouldn't know.
Andy, what would you add to this?
I don't want to add anything because I may become a father in the next 10 minutes. And I don't want to run into this trouble. I'm having it now.
I see. You're having all these discussions, Eloise.
Well, if they can't agree, the simplest solution is obviously to marry it, to name it after a relative who has thousands of money. Then the relative will give the child money and they won't have to worry what to call it because everybody else will be calling it Angel and calling it constantly.
That's a woman's attitude, all right.
Andy.
Eloise, what is thousands of money?
A lot.
Well, look, girl. Yes, Ted.
Now, that's a woman who's been thinking of thousands of dollars and is too excited to say it, see?
Well, now, wait a minute, girls. Let's really help these parents. I'm going to take each one of you right down the line, and I want you to name the baby. I don't care what you name it, but I want it named. Because this family is listening in right at this minute. Madge, a name for this baby, please.
If it's a boy, Michael.
Oh, I like that very much.
There must be quite a few Michaels here.
And if it's a girl?
If it's a girl, Alice.
Alice or Michael. I hope that hasn't started fists flying in the family listening in. What would you say, Harriet?
Well, I have to be consistent with what I said earlier, so I suppose you could call it Amber Heliotrope Eczema.
Oh, I know twins called Quincy and Quinine. I wonder if that would help them. I really do, as a matter of fact. Robin?
Well, if it's a man, the easiest name for a man is Casper Milktoe. And if it's a girl, I think Kathy's a nice name.
You do. And Eloise?
Oh, well, I'm going to be sort of plebeian about this, but I think a nice name for a boy is Peter, and I think she should give the girl an unusual name, like Wendy or something, because then nobody gets it the first time, and they have to ask you again, and for a girl, that's a good thing.
Yes, Ted.
I can't resist asking the listening public to notice this little theme they've just heard. Here are four intelligent girls who are asked to name a real baby and really, in that way, affect its future. And instead of thinking about it and giving it the consideration, these four gals just give them four names off the elbow, just like they give all their answers. 1, 2, 3. And sit in your places and don't wave at me.
All the girls are waving at Ted on that one. All right, Eloise, answer him.
Well, Ted, we only had 4 seconds and we thought of something. You had 9 months and you still call her Happy.
I think
that with that remark from our lovely...
Of course,
Halloween,
I still think that happy is what she is, see? So that's where you were.
I'm sorry, Ted. You really lost that round.
Okay.
Now, we're going on to our next question. What is the next question, Andy?
Ted, here's a question from a woman. An anonymous writer from Glen Ridge, New Jersey. Ever since I've been knee-high to a pencil, I have written poetry. I could never say with my lips what I can say when my pencil and heart get together. I'm madly in love with a wonderful man, and I'm making to put my feelings for him in a poem. He has told me he loves me, and now here is my problem. My friends and my mother tell me it's dangerous to let a man know how deeply you feel about him, especially in black and white, and that if any poetry is written, it's the man's place and not the woman's. I don't want to take a chance on losing his interest or having him take my love for granted. What should I do?
All right, girls, what should she do? Harriet.
If no name happens to be Edna St. Vincent Millay, I'd say by all means write him a poem. But speaking as a lady who once put her great love into little verses, I would advise against it. Send him a greeting card, send him the love sonnets of Shakespeare, but don't send him a poem.
Why send him anything, Harriet? Why not sit back and say, my birthday is tomorrow, bud? See what he sends you. Yes, Robin?
Well, I don't agree with the mother in this case, because I think the girl should tell the man that she's very much in love with him. And I don't see anything wrong with sending poetry, but I don't think, unless you're a very good poet, you should sit down and knock off anything.
And what do you say, Madge?
Well, I think anyone who has the capacity for deep feeling and can express it should do so. I don't agree with her parents. I think she should send him the poems. I think if he really loves her, he will be terribly grateful and flattered. And even if he doesn't appreciate them, perhaps a publisher will someday. And after all, a great many poetical careers that have been very successful have started that way.
Pardon me, I think that's a very good idea, Madge.
It almost
Louise,
made you
do you
joke.
Agree or disagree?
Well, I definitely think that you should send the poetry because, I mean, it's silly to think of not doing it. I mean, look at Elizabeth Barrett Browning. She was certainly no slouch in the poetry department, and she got her man. So I think she should go ahead because I think poetry and songs and letters are all the language of love, and when you're talking that language, even a man will keep quiet.
Is it?
Sometimes.
I think that the women use every artifice I've ever heard of to get a man. Always, every angle or every question is always answered here. Yes, you can get him that way. Yes, you can get him this way. It's always, maybe if the gal would just invite him over and cook him a nice square meal, he'd love her anyway.
So heartily with your observation. I don't know what all these girls are trying to get a man so much and so hard for. I mean, what have they got when they've got him? Yes, Robin?
And every man we have on the show, all he wants to do is have a steak dinner. Every 5 minutes, you know, why doesn't the girl cook me a dinner?
I want to know, why don't they? It's hard to get steaks, I know, in that gang.
Yes, Andy?
I don't think that the way to a man's stomach is through his iambic pentameter.
I will have to have that broken out of code.
Walt Whitman himself here tonight.
Well, now, Andy, you really led off there with quite a good start. Suppose you read the next question.
The next question and problem emanates from Worcester, Massachusetts, sent to us by No Name Please. A friend of ours, who is a bachelor of 45... has suddenly decided he'd like to marry and wants to marry a young girl. He says a young girl would look up to him, would see him in a combination of father and sweetheart, and would admire him. We think if it's love and adoration he wants, he's more apt to find it in a more mature person. We would appreciate your views. Paula?
All right, girls, they're mad.
Well, it's been my observation that when an older man marries a young girl, he's the one who does the loving and adoring and admiring. And the bride feels after a time, and usually a very short time, that a man who's old enough to be her father should be exactly that, but not a husband.
The whole audience seem to agree with you, Madge. Robin?
Yes, I think the man's a fraud because in this letter he said that he was looking for someone who he could be sort of like a father to. Isn't that right, Andy?
Combination.
And I don't think any man 45 who's a bat through is looking for a girl that he can be fatherly to.
Yes, Ed?
On the contrary, this looks to me like a very, very remarkable gentleman. 45 years of bachelorhood, now that's a record that anybody should envy to begin with. He shows there that he has a great deal... Sit down, girl. A great deal of intelligence. And the second is that at 45, he's not letting some little swivel-headed blonde come along and just throw him off his feet. He's sitting back and casually thinking it all over. Now, should I marry a young one, or should I marry one with greater maturity? He's approaching the problem as a man who feels that he's going to have the responsibility. I think this is a remarkable example of intelligence.
Oh, they're waving their hands at Fred Ted on that one. Yes, Madge.
Well, I just want to say that if, according to your theory, he has shown great genius not to have married until 45, don't you think he must have had a complete mental collapse at this time?
It looks very much like it. It looks very much like it.
And Robin?
Well, I would say he's lucky to get anything at 45, and I don't think he's choosy.
I know.
Well, he can afford to be.
Yes, and furthermore, he's probably waited until he's 45 because he couldn't get anybody else, and he wants somebody young because he's afraid somebody older will have sense enough not to marry him.
Look, of course, this type of question does challenge the sense of humor, but this man is listening in, girls, and he'd like a serious answer. So let's give him one or two just short, quick, and to the point. Now, what will he do about this problem, Madge?
Don't marry the young girl.
All right, point number one.
If he marries the young girl and then changes his mind, he's got plenty of time. If he marries an old one, he's stuck with it now.
Yes, Robin?
Well, if she's a very mature young girl and reasonably smart, and he's in love with her and she is apparently in love with him, there's always the exception to the rule, and I would say, get married.
And you would say, get married? And
sure.
Harriet, what would you say?
Well, there's something rather pathetic about an old man trying to keep up with a child bride of his daddy's side and trying to deny that the young and heart belong to each other. And after all, only the gods are young forever, and no man is a god. Ask Eloise.
Robin?
Well, I mean, Harriet, you know, he's not exactly on his last leg. He's only 45. Give the man a break.
But he's thinking of marrying a girl, I suppose, 18 or 20. You don't have to be a fool.
But he's still fairly young. You know, 45 is...
Oh, but so much older than he is.
At this argument between Robin and Harriet, Andy starts waving a hand about his head.
I wanted to point out...
Self-conscious, Andy.
I'm not self-conscious. I'm only 37. But you're probably going around with a young kid of 43.
I'm self-conscious.
Yes, Andy, what were you going to add?
Are you kidding? I just finished.
I thought you were really going to say something, Andy. I just...
It's Eloise that you hear over here. Go ahead.
Well, all right, Eloise.
Well, I can't agree with Robin. I don't think 45 is the youngest thing in the world, and men age much more rapidly anyway. He's practically a wreck. And furthermore, he should stick to the mature type because, as I said once before about a situation like this, she won't have time to look up to him because the young one will be worried about holding him up.
I want to see Eloise again when she gets to be 45 and is wearing the same outfit, you know.
Sum up this question for no name, please, or Worcester. I think it really depends on the girl he plans to marry. And if you look for a girl who's sweet and not just sweet 16, I think you'll get a better run for his money.
Just a minute, Paula.
Yeah.
You girls have been having your own way long enough. I got a few questions I'd like to ask.
Well, I guess it's about time that we gave the men a chance, Ted. Ladies and gentlemen, the man strikes back.
I have a few questions here. Thank you, girls, for consider very carefully. First one is, why are women who actually don't want to do something, why are they the ones always the most offended if they're not invited to do it? Mag?
Well, you get hurt because when you're left out of an invitation, you're usually left out for one of two reasons. Either you are not wanted, Or you have not been thought of, and neither one is a very flattering thing.
Well, but if you don't want to do it anyway, why make such a nuisance?
But you just want to know that people want you to do it.
Oh, just vanity, huh? Certainly.
Oh, excuse me. Not vanity. Just you want them to know that they're fond of you.
Vanity, vanity, always Eloise.
Well, no. good timing on that, Mr. Malone. Anyway, I think it's really the men who feel that way much more than the women. I mean, there are only two things that they're really interested in seem to be girls and their stomach. But if they're not invited to do everything else, they go into a complete wing ding. They want to be on an everything from a party to a wait. But they're usually more the type for a wait.
I think you're right, one part about that complete wing ding. You ever been on a wing ding lately, Eloise? Very well. Robin?
Well, I think more than anything, Ted, it just flatters their ego. They like to be asked, and they like to refuse politely. That's all.
We hit it at the first, vanity. I just wanted to be sure. Now, the second question is this. I'm willing to admit that there are some women drivers who are as good as men. I've never met one personally, but I just... But after having made this concession, I can't understand why it is that whenever there's an automobile accident in which a woman driver is involved, no matter who's at fault or how it happened, the woman immediately starts a tirade in which the poor man is accused of any and all infractions of all regulations. Once I was accused of running into a woman's car when it was her bumper, which was halfway through my car. Harriet.
Well, it's because women have had to stand up against such maligning all these years. Men go on saying women are wretched drivers. To any little accident that happens, the poor woman, immediately, she has to be on the defensive. It's her fault whether it's her fault or not. So she has to start screaming back before she's screamed at.
Andre, scream at her.
Harriet, I've seen a lot of women drivers. And when they're on the road, the men are on the defensive, believe me.
Well, I think it really stems from the fact that we women admire you men so intensely that we want to do things the way you do. And 9/10 of us have learned our driving from men. So we copy them and we've learned how to behave in case of accidents from taxi drivers.
Madge, I think I could make it even and just say I believe every word you said.
Thank you.
Robin.
And furthermore...
Oh...
A cab driver just did this to me the other day. I got out of the car, he bumped into me. I got out of the car before I could open my mouth. He had practically had his fist down my throat. Telling me what was I running into his cab? It was a poor old 1940 cab. It was no good anyway. I'd ruined it. And he ran into me.
That is obviously untrue on the surface because the 1942 cabs I've seen, if he had run into you with it, there'd be no cab left. Eloise.
Well, I certainly want to disagree with Madge. I don't think that we drive like men. As a matter of fact, the reason we have to drive the way we do is because men are always trying to drive on both sides of the road. They operate a car like it was a B-17 and always want to show you how well they can do it with one arm.
While women being... Oh, yeah, Paula.
Well, Ted, there was one point that the girls didn't bring up. Maybe they're shy or bashful, don't want to mention it. But I'm glad to bring it up. It might be a technique that you don't know about, but it's called the wolf at the wheel. Now, you're driving alone. See, a girl is driving alone in the car, and suddenly a wolf spots the girl, you see? And he drives up on one side, and he drives up on the other. Well, naturally, the girl swerves to the left, swerves to the right. She's trying to keep on the straight and narrow, you see?
Yes.
And pay no attention to him. And so she tries to swerve out of the way, and if she hits some poor fellow driving the opposite direction, well, of course, he's furious at the girl because he doesn't know that some wolf has been after her and practically driven her into the ditch while she tries to defend herself.
I have heard some horrible alibis for women drivers, but none like that. Girls, why is it that when a man and wife go into a huddle before making an important decision, and the man comes up with a brilliant idea, it's promptly discarded as being impractical? But later, when the man's idea is finally carried out to the nth degree, the woman takes the credit for it and said it was her idea all the time. Robin.
Well, probably because she's the one that carries it out, you know. So she...
Carries what out?
Carries out.
Go ahead, Madge.
Well, I think Robin meant she carried out the idea. But anyway, I think that the woman not only carries out the idea, but the man's suggestion is usually so hazy and so involved, he has such trouble explaining it, that the woman doesn't know it's his idea. She happens later to get the same idea and carries it out logically and intelligently and brilliantly. See, woman.
The man
then says, well, I thought of that in the first place.
I think you're right, Madge, that it's hazy to the woman.
No, it's hazy the way the man expresses it.
Paula.
Well, I don't agree with Madge that the man has the idea first. I believe that the woman has the idea first, and men are so stubborn and so egotistical that the woman can't just come right out and honestly give him the idea. She has to work it around a certain way so that the man will think that it's his idea, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's
Eloise. What...
No, well, I'll be nice to the men this time. I agree that the women, but it isn't true what you said, because when a man so seldom has a good idea, much less a brilliant idea, that his wife is only too delighted to give him the credit because it shows he's finally using what little intelligence he has.
She never does give him the credit, though. She takes it herself.
Well, I'm sorry, Ted Malone, and hands down, girls, that's all we have time for tonight. It's been fun having you with us, Ted, and we want to thank you, Harriet Van Horn, for joining us tonight on our round table of romance.
So you see, young man, when we leave it to the girls, we get some mighty fine comments, don't you think?
Why, of course.
And girls do very well musically, too. Listen. Don't be a baby.
Now, wait a minute.
Oh, you don't think girls can sing, huh? Well, you listen again.
I know a little bit about a lot of things, but I don't know enough about you. Just when I think you're mine, you try a different line. And baby, what can I do? I read the latest news, no buttons on my shoes. But baby, I'm confused about you. You get me in a spin. Oh, what a stew I'm in. 'Cause I don't know enough about you. Jack of all trades, master of none. And isn't it a shame? I'm so sure that you'd be good for me if you'd only play my game. You know I went to school, and I'm nobody's fool. That is to say, until I met you, I know a little bit about a lot of things, but I don't know enough about you. Jack of all trades, master of none, and ain't it a shame? So sure that you'd be good for me if you'd only play my game. You know I went to school, and I'm nobody's fool. That is to say, until I met you, I know a little bit about a lot of things. But I don't know enough about you.
Well, that was very fine, miss, but there's quite a difference between your voice and Jerry Sullivan.
Well, true. Which one do you like best?
Oh, no, I'm not sticking my chin out on that. girl, as you suggest. What happens when it's time to rewrap this week's surprise package?
Young man, if you leave it to me, I'll just come in and say, this is the Armed Forces Radio Service.